Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand. Created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. In March, Nicholas Kristof, the New York Times columnist, launched an essay contest of the most unusual kind, maybe not so much in terms of the requirements, but because of the prize, an all-expense-paid trip to visit some of the poorest areas in the world. Almost 4,000 students applied, as it turned out, and from those, there was a winner, a 23-year-old graduate of the University of Missouri's journalism school, Casey Parks. Next week, the two will leave for a two-week trip to Africa, but we wanted to check in with the two of them before they leave. We're going to also talk to them after they come back, and we are delighted to have New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof back with us and Casey Parks. Hello, Nicholas. Hello, Casey.
Hello.
Hey, Brian. Hi, Casey.
Hi.
And Nick, just tell our listeners who may not have heard about it, what inspired you to launch this contest?
Sure. Well, I mean, I was trying to figure out ways of engaging, you know, readers and especially young readers in some of the issues that I care about that have to do with poverty or Darfur. And I thought that, you know, that maybe among young people there's a tendency to tune out op-ed pages and old fogey columnists. So I thought if I could bring a student with me and that person could blog, then, you know, wow, that might be able to build that connection. And so originally I was thinking about, you know, taking a student along with me to Darfur, and then the Times lawyers were not really happy about dragging a student to a war zone. And so it kind of evolved into this, you know, trip through some really poor areas where we'll look at health issues and other issues.
So it changed from the genocide tour to the poverty tour.
Yeah, to some degree.
Yeah. Casey, it's a heck of a prize.
It certainly is.
Tell us about your essay, and I don't know if you have it there and you want to read part of it.
Oh, I actually don't have it
okay.
with me right now, but I had been taking a class during the semester that Nick offered the trip, and it was called Confronting Controls of the Media, and it was mostly about international controls of media, and the longer I was in the class, the more I realized how provincially I was living, and that I mostly just read national news or local news, and if I did read international news, I got really bogged down by the names or similar things and wasn't staying interested in them. And but Nick's columns are columns that I really liked for a long time because they're much more accessible than other stories to me. And so when he offered the contest, I was really excited to try to apply, but I really thought it was a long shot. So I actually didn't spend a whole lot of time on the essay because I really thought I had no chance. So on the bus ride home from school one day, I was thinking that I think the topic was just basically explain why we should take you to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to, I came at the essay with the idea of explaining why I had never left the country. And the reason I had never left the country is because my family had never had enough money to. And it was really just, the writing the essay was just really organic. I never edited it. I just said exactly why I thought I should be able to go to Africa, what journalism meant to me.
So you wrote it on a bus, and you never edited it.
No, I kind of wish I
had. Now she tells me.
So how exactly did you choose this essay, Nick, out of the 4,000 entries you got?
Well, you know, the entries just started streaming in, and, you know, I really hadn't thought very much about exactly how I was going to pick a winner or what criteria I was going to use, and but a lot of the students had already traveled abroad, and so a lot of the students wrote their essays about, you know, their trip to Kenya, for example, or to Costa Rica, and I really thought that that it would be useful to take somebody who had not been to these kinds of places, and in fact, Casey has not been abroad at all, and that was a real strength of her application, because I thought that she would bring a freshness to what she sees, which is what I don't have, and that she really can supply. And I thought she was a great writer. I thought she'd be able to, communicate well, as a blogger, and I hope, hopefully as a video blogger, which he'll be doing for MTV as well.
Yeah, Casey will be blogging, I understand, for the New York Times and for MTV. So because it's MTV, are you going to do a video blog?
Yes, sir. Naka Nathaniel is coming with us and helping me with the video reports and showing me how to edit the videos.
We can take a few phone calls for New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof and the University of Missouri Graduate School of Journalism student Casey Parks, who won his essay contest to see the world with Nicholas Kristof. They're going to see some of the worst poverty in Africa in a few days. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Nick, you said an interesting thing a few minutes ago, that you're interested in Casey partly because she's never been abroad, so you thought she may be looking with very fresh eyes. Do you feel somewhat jaded as a longtime foreign affairs columnist? Do you think that it's tougher for you to see things at this point that you might have been able to see 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah, at least I wonder about that. I mean, I think there's always a debate among foreign correspondents at the New York Times or elsewhere about how long one should, stay in a place. And as a reporter stays in a place, then you tend to get more experience, you tend to get a much more subtle understanding of that country, better language skills and so on. But you also lose that freshness, and you don't write the stories that will engage people back home. And so, at the Times, for example, we tend to rotate people every, 3 to 5 years. And it's a little bit different, for a columnist. But sure, I do sometimes wonder if when I'm going abroad, if I'm necessarily, seeing things and writing things that are going to, make that connection, or if I've just, if I think, oh, yeah, I saw that already in Niger and in Benin and in Togo and yeah. Zimbabwe, it's not new.
It's one of the, eternal tensions in journalism, experience versus freshness, and the advantages and maybe disadvantages of each. Casey, you said an interesting thing a couple of minutes ago, that you find Nick's columns particularly accessible. What did you mean accessible?
Well, I think sometimes, and I love the New York Times, but sometimes it's so hard to read some of them as a young person, because they're such an authority. But I think when he writes, he treats his readers gingerly, like he explains things, but not in a way that makes you feel stupid, but it's just he uses language that I recognize the language, and it's familiar and I can understand it, and that makes reading names that I've never heard a lot easier.
One of the other times that Nick came on here, he talked about using personal stories of individuals,
right,
in Darfur,
right,
and places like that. Do you think that's part of it?
Certainly. I mean, earlier this summer he was in Namibia and they were doing videos there, and they were all personal videos. There was one about a 12-year-old girl who was raising her whole family, and it made me, there's nothing as extreme in Mississippi. I could understand it because I'd seen a lot of poverty in Mississippi, and so it was more familiar, and it gave me an entry point to understand the story better. And also, it pulls at your heart, too.
Brian, the reason I take that approach is partly because when I first joined the Times, I was writing about economics and, kind of obscure, difficult topics. And I was living on the Upper West Side, so I take the 1, 2, or 3, subway down. And I'd watch other people reading the paper, and, I'd see them, look at my headline, and, they look at it for about a second and maybe look at the first part of the lead and then turn the page, and you just wanted to go over them and, shake them and say, hey, I've got a great eighth paragraph. You realize you don't get that chance when you see everybody, quickly turning the page. And so it really impressed upon me just the importance of getting a lead and especially a personal story that will draw people in and help you tell some kind of a larger story, some kind of a larger narrative.
New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof, my guest on WNYC, along with the winner of his See the World with Nicholas Kristof essay contest, 23-year-old University of Missouri journalism student Casey Parks. They will be going to see some of the worst poverty in Africa beginning in a few days, and she'll be blogging about it for The Times and for MTV as the winner of this contest. Let's take a few phone calls. Michael and Teaneck, you're on WNYC. Hello, Michael.
Yes, good morning, Brian. I have a question for Mr. Kristof. I think I understand the motivation for this contest and for the tour, but aren't you worried about it being perceived as exploitative or voyeuristic? And I can take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I did wonder a little bit about the voyeurism issue and, you know, whether it would come across a little bit as kind of, you know, poverty tourism or something in a way that is distasteful. But, you know, having written about these issues and just being so incredibly frustrated at the lack of attention they get and the way problems like Darfur drag on and on and on and get worse and worse and just don't get the attention, or, you know, the same thing for AIDS or malaria or maternal health care, then increasingly I'm really kind of willing to take the risk of, you know, of
being accused of that.
Yeah.
Casey, has the have the issues of voyeurism or exploitation crossed your mind at all in this process?
Not really, because I know I haven't thought of it, because that's not why I want to go there. And so,
Casey, what countries are on the itinerary?
We're going to Equatorial Guinea first, and then to Cameroon and to the Central African Republic.
Any place that you're particularly excited to see?
I'm really all of them. I'm reading a book about Equatorial Guinea right now, so at the moment it. But really all of them. We have a great itinerary, and I'm excited about all of it.
Asari in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Did I say your name right?
Yes, you did say my name right.
Thank you for calling.
Okay. My concern is, why are we traveling distance to see poverty? Why there's poverty in America? All this money that we're spending to buy air ticket could have used for something else.
Nick?
You know, there are certainly poverty problems in the U.S. And, you know, we saw after Katrina, you know, last year, the degree to which we were surprised by it, which we shouldn't have been. But at the same time, I think the scale of poverty abroad is something that we don't understand, that we need to understand much better, and its scale really is just vastly different. I mean, you've got somewhere around 2 million people every year dying of malaria, which is something that can be prevented with a $5 bed net that you know, that will protect, say, three people. And when you actually go to these places and you meet mothers who, you know, maybe have one bed net that can protect three of their kids, and they've got four kids, and every night they have to figure out which of their kids is going to sleep outside the bed net and is going to risk dying of malaria, then, you know, it kind of comes home to you. And that, you know, for all of the problems we have in the U.S., that is an order of magnitude worse than anything we have here.
Casey, you wrote in your essay, I believe, that your own family's poverty had influenced your journalism.
Yes, sir.
Are you interested in sort of comparing degrees of poverty on this trip, like Nick was kind of just getting at?
Well, in a way, and to respond to the caller, that's one of the reasons why I had focused mostly on local news, because I felt like there were plenty of foreign correspondents, but every day in Mississippi I was seeing plenty of poor people, plenty of people who couldn't afford food. But as I started reading more and more, I realized the magnitude is just so different. And it's not, I'm not going to take numbers on who's poor, but certainly it's an influence in why I want to go there. I remember Nick said something to me when he was interviewing me about how, because I had grown up in poverty and I'd seen a lot of poverty in the South, he was interested to see what I would think of poverty in Africa as opposed to Mississippi.
And I'll be interested to read your writing on that. Nick, before we run out of time, maybe the Times lawyers won't let you take Casey to Darfur, but the situation there just does not dissipate. This week, the African Union announced that they will be withdrawing their troops at the end of this month as their mandate comes to an end. The UN passed a resolution last week that sought to replace those 7,000 troops with 17,000 UN troops, but Khartoum rejected it. Where to from here?
It's getting worse and worse. And, you know, there is some brinkmanship. It's possible that the African Union peacekeepers aren't going to leave, that things, you know, that they'll figure out a way of keeping some peacekeepers. But it you know, it looks as if we're really on the precipice. Sudan is launching a major military offensive in Darfur. It also seems to me as if they're trying to get rid of foreign witnesses in the area. They have a Chicago Tribune reporter on trial for espionage, which will certainly help keep reporters out of the area. More aid workers have been killed in the last 2 months than in the entire previous 3 years, which will drive foreign aid workers out of the area. Now the AU peacekeepers may well be leaving. You know, if you're planning to slaughter several hundred thousand more people, then those would be the preliminary steps you would take. And I just can't believe that the world is letting Sudan get away with this.
What do you want to see the United States do?
Well, a starting point would be for President Bush in his speech to the General Assembly, to the UN General Assembly, to you know, help put this on the world's agenda. I don't think that actually U.S. ground troops are the solution, but I think that President Bush can put it on the agenda. I think we need to move toward U.N. peacekeepers going in without Sudan's permission, and I think that at that point Sudan will accept them. I think the U.S. can impose a no-fly zone together with France from Chad, and that will at least stop Sudanese helicopters from strafing villages. And we can impose targeted sanctions on Sudanese leaders as one more way of twisting their arms.
The president will speak at the UN in front of the General Assembly in just a few days. We'll see if he takes you up on this. Casey, you said you wrote your essay on a bus and in 15 minutes, and you didn't edit it before sending it in. Was it like hand-scrawled on index cards?
I was writing it. I had written part of it like on my ankle in pen. Just like notes that I wanted to remember that I wanted to write. And I actually
on your ankle. That must have been an interesting position, but go ahead.
I'm double jointed, so I can reach them pretty easily. But I actually typed it when I got back to my apartment.
Oh, you did.
And I was leaving for New York the next morning, so I didn't have a lot of time. So I read it once and thought, well, this is honest. This is who I am, so I'm going to send it.
But so Nick, handwriting didn't count in this in the judging of this essay.
No, it was. I mean, we got all kinds of other accoutrements to go along with applications, but Casey's was just an essay, a great essay.
All right, they're leaving in a few days for the various countries in Africa that Casey mentioned, Equatorial Guinea, Cameroon, Central African Republic, perhaps Burundi and Rwanda as well. And we have you scheduled to come back on the show after your trip in a few weeks. I hope you can do that. Casey, good luck. I hope you learn a lot. I hope you have a fascinating experience and can communicate lots of stuff to the rest of the world via your blogs on the New York Times and MTV. And Nick, thank you as always for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
By the way, we have a link to Casey's winning essay on our webpage. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org, and thanks.